Keep supporting the station that brings you the people's voice, the station that wins more yearly industry awards than any other station in the country. At this time of corporate dominance of the public airwaves, WBAI is needed more than ever.
Please pledge or send your gift today to ensure the success of our $1 million capital campaign for the future. Call 212-209-2909. That number again, 212-209-2909. This is Ossie Davis.
And Ruby Dee.
Thank you for supporting the future of WBAI.
New York City, there are 700,000 children who live in poverty. Almost half the children in the city are living in poverty, so 44% of the
children. Committee Against Anti-Asian Violence released a report documenting what they say is a pattern of police abuse in Asian American communities.
If my son was shot in the back, then the officer should be arrested. And
this kind of ineffective and at times incompetent behavior by NYPD.
He shot my son in the back. He always.
Someday the Times will stumble upon this tragedy.
Robertson, an African-American plainclothes transit officer, was shot several times in the back by a white off-duty officer, Peter Del Debbio.
This is a call from an inmate at a correctional facility.
It's amazing to me how we can always afford another policeman to build another prison.
This cut that the mayor is instituting will destroy the ability to care for all the citizens of New York.
The WBAI Evening News, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m.
That's the WBAI Evening News every weekend at 6, the only news that will force you to pull over in your car and wait till it's over. Right now, though, it's 8 o'clock and time for another exciting edition of Off the Hook. Uh-oh.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get much worse.
Okay, this isn't a very good sign, so we're going to kind of fade this away gracefully while we still can. Fade it to something a little bit more appropriate. Well, I hate it when things go wrong, don't you? It's really kind of scary sometimes, but you know what else bothers me is that our theme is still spinning. Hang on, let me go rescue it. There in some form. We have these devices called cart machines that are kind of archaic, and sometimes they eat carts, and, well, we don't want that to happen to our special theme here. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight. We have with us on the phone Bernie. Yes, Bernie, you there?
I am. Hey, by the way, that sounded better than what I hear in most radio stations.
Well, you didn't hear what happened at the beginning because you weren't with us. It started to really sound like it was about to, you know, break or snap or something like that. And that's that would have been a tragedy, one that would have stayed with us for the rest of our lives. But fortunately, that did not happen, at least not yet. Anyway, it's been a while since we've heard from you. And actually, I saw you a couple of weeks ago, but the people on the air didn't. And
yeah, we had a fun weekend.
We did. We certainly did. We visited some scary places, including, oh gosh, I still have nightmares about this place. Federal prison in the middle of a city. I just can't get used to it. But you guys down there in Philadelphia, you think you can make it work, huh?
Well, I don't think it's workable, but well, they'll make it work. I mean, people aren't getting out of this place. It's a $200 million facility.
Uh-huh.
And no, my mistake. It's a $70 million facility designed to hold approximately 200 prisoners.
Uh-huh.
You can work out the math and see how economical that is.
Well, it shows that we spare no expense for the people that we want to keep locked away. You know, it's interesting, though. I saw people walking around that building, the building that said we're not allowed to take photos of it. That is what it says, isn't it?
It did. Did some research on that. Apparently, there is no such law. Even the people of the Bureau of Prisons in Washington were hard-pressed to come up with any actual law that says it's illegal to take pictures
Of course there's no such. I mean, it would be just as ridiculous as saying, well, you can't take pictures of the moon, it's a security hazard, you know, or something like that. It's nonsense. But people actually follow these rules, and I imagine there's more such rules within the walls than outside the walls.
Just one of these say-so things, because we say so.
Pretty much. But the thing is, what they fail to realize is that they can't say so to the people that they can't control, and that's most of us, fortunately, still. We're still not controlled by the people in there. However, we may be controlled by the mentality, the prison mentality, which pretty much penalizes you for anything that you might happen to do. And it's spreading. It's getting bigger. I believe you have some scary statistics. Do you still have those statistics as to where it's going, the number of people that are being in prison, the percentages, things like that?
As far as minorities go, while I was in the federal prison in Fairfield, New Jersey, I remember reading a New York Times article. Someone sent me a clipping of, actually, while I was there. A lot of good people out there kept me in touch with the outside world by sending me newspaper clippings, and this was a depressing one, but it hit home. It said by the year 2005, at the current rates of incarceration, by the year 2005, over 50% of African-American males between ages of 18 and 35 would be incarcerated. That's more than half. Most
incarcerated
or no, this was actually physically detained in a facility. More than half, most African Americans between 18 and 35, and that starts to affect the gene pool for, you know, for whatever however you feel about that. That's an amazing number of amazingly large percentage of a particular cultural background being locked up in a country that's supposedly free.
Well, I have to say, that's almost an unbelievable statistic. Where exactly did you get this from?
This is from the New York Times. They were merely extrapolating the current increases in levels of incarceration over the past 10 years. The numbers have just, the curve is just going up at a phenomenal rate. And they said by the year 2005, if things go at the current rate, and they're building prisons left and right as you witnessed yourself a couple of weekends ago here in Philadelphia.
I think we all know, too, that the drug laws, for instance, are enforced not exactly evenly as far as income level and race and things like that. If you're a poor black person, you're much more likely to be sent to prison for a minor drug offense than, say, a rich white person from Connecticut.
That, too, and then there's the sentencing guidelines are different for what's referred to as crack cocaine versus powdered cocaine, which I don't see a big difference between them, but the sentences are 10 times, the levels, the numbers that are used to calculate the severity of sentence are 10 times greater for crack as compared to regular cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
So, and because that seems to be statistically a drug of choice among African Americans who use coca-based drugs, then you could argue that's a, you know, an ethnic discriminatory kind of thing. But who knows?
Well, it goes beyond that, too. I mean, you know, not just drugs, but say you toss your kid into a garbage pail. If you're a rich white kid from New Jersey, all of a sudden the whole community rallies around you, and News Channel 4 does all kinds of specials on you and things like that. But if you, let's say you live in the Bronx and you're not of white complexion, you just wind up in prison for the rest of your life, and nobody thinks twice about it.
It could happen.
But who's to say who's right and who's not? Anyway, why are we talking about this? This is a hacker show. What are we talking about crime and prisons for? Well, because increasingly hackers are being drawn into the world of prisons and crime, and it's not really the choice of the hackers. It's the choice of the government, pulling them in. You, Bernie, S., a perfect example of that, someone who is minding your own business and suddenly turned into a maximum security prisoner, in a maximum security prison, dealing with underworld crime figures, murderers, rapists, all kinds of cafe society like that.
And father rapers.
Yeah, you even had a couple of those. But that's all behind us now, for you anyway. It's still very much with us in the form of Kevin Mitnick, and who knows who else in the future. An update on Kevin's case, well, there is no real update on Kevin's case. If you look at the website, you'll see that for him to read all of his evidence by trial date of January 19th, he'll have to go through something like 40,000 pages a day. He still has not seen a single page of this. His lawyer still has not even started to look at this, from what I understand, and that's really troubling. It tells me, and this is just me personally saying this, it tells me that his lawyer is counting on the trial not happening. He's counting on the trial, say, being plea bargained, and I have to know Kevin is not going to plea bargain, at least not at this stage in his life. Maybe he'll be broken in the weeks ahead. I hope not.
Well, if his lawyer is going on prior statistics, the federal government has a 97% conviction rate, and 97% successful conviction rate. 95% of the cases that they bring about are a result of a plea bargain. Now, you wonder why that is. Are they just always right? Well, turns out no. The reason being, I believe, is that the federal sentencing guidelines are so severe that people have a choice between going to trial, and if they've generally, before they even get to the trial stage, they've gone through several hearings. That by that point, they see the handwriting on the wall when the police or prosecutors literally commit perjury, and you realize, hey, this trial is not going to be fair. You have a choice between having what you believe is going to be an unfair trial or pleading guilty and getting a lesser sentence than you would if you were found guilty. If you're found guilty, you get the absolute maximum sentence they can possibly throw at you. If you plead guilty, they maybe will cut it in half, which is still, you know, an outrageous sentence, but you know, you take your choice. And so it's a pretty draconian system the way it's set up. And
I think everybody has an example in their lives where they're accused of something they didn't do, and they wound up having to sort of make up for it even though they knew they were innocent. But, you know, just to make things easier, to make it go away, they agreed to, you know, to behave or something like that, or just stay out of trouble because they supposedly got in trouble before.
What most people forget is that the criminal justice system really has very little to do, or anything to do, well, it has something to do with it, but very little to do, I found, with right or wrong, or justice, or common sense, or logic, or compassion, any of those things. It just has to do with the prosecutor doing whatever they have to do to win, and your defense attorney doing whatever he or she has to do to win. And it just, unfortunately, comes down to that kind of a game. I mean, truth just takes a holiday. Truth really has no bearing in these proceedings, just like an irrelevant item. It's weird.
Well, it's incidental. Maybe you'll happen upon it along the way. Maybe you won't. I also think it has a lot to do with fueling the public's desire for revenge. Revenge against what? I don't really know. But there's this perception out there that criminals are running rampant, that the laws are being, you know, bent to accommodate them. They're playing tennis at these country clubs when in actuality they're prisons. It's something political. It's what comes out on election day, before election day a lot of times, where politicians have to fight crime. They have to be seen as very tough on crime, and they don't really care about the innocent people that get swept up along the way.
I don't think anybody got reelected based on their arguing for more sensible for prison reform from a standpoint of trying to decrease the number of people in prison, or to give people opportunities to do things other than commit crimes when they get out, that sort of thing. They're just not popular political stances to take, and politicians realize that.
Okay, we're going to read a couple of news stories here and update people on what's been going on in the world of computers and hackers and crime and all that kind of thing, and then we'll be taking phone calls in a little bit as well. Plus, we have some other interesting little tidbits to pass along your way. Here's an update. This is dated November 5th. Two California teenagers who mounted one of the most systematic hack attacks ever on U.S. military computers have received their official sentence from a federal judge. Death. No. Wrong story. I'm reading the future. No. No more computers. That's what it is. What do you think about that, Bernie? No more computers.
Well, that include using a microwave oven that has a microprocessor in it, or a
well,
TV
no,
set?
I think they're a bit more reasonable, more rational in this particular case. U.S. District Judge Maxine Chesney ordered the two, aged 16 and 17, to keep their, this is a Reuters story, and I feel like an idiot reading it, but I'm going to read it anyway, to keep their cyber noses clean during their 3-year probation. The U.S. Attorney's Office announced on Thursday. The defendants will attend school and make their grades, the office said, reporting the conditions of probation imposed during Wednesday's closed sentencing session. The judge forbade the hackers from possessing or using a computer modem, from acting as computer consultants, or having any contact with computers out of sight of a school teacher, a librarian, an employer, or other person approved by the probation officer. Chris Andrian.
What if they become a librarian themselves?
I don't know. Chris Andrian, a lawyer for one of the boys, said Thursday the judge had been wise to pull the plug. So here you have the lawyer agreeing with that. That is the punishment aspect. It is like taking their toy away from them, Andrian said. But I think the order should stick. They have been sufficiently frightened and humiliated. They don't want to run back into the arms of the law. The two hackers who have not been officially identified pleaded guilty in July to charges of juvenile delinquency stemming from a string of cyber attacks in February, which set alarm bells ringing over the state of U.S. computer security. They were also ordered to serve 100 hours of community service to pay $4,330 and $1,195, respectively, in restitution to institutions and companies damaged by their intrusions. Each of them could have been put into custody until their 21st birthday. But this sentence was the result of plea agreements, which included the no-computer provision. And I'll bet these guys had lawyers, that they really paid a lot of money for. If they had been in the position of, say, you or Kevin Mitnick, where you didn't have the funds for a really super-duper defense, they probably would have been sent to prison and seen as public enemy number one. And their lives would have been destroyed.
Were they tried as juveniles, Or were they being prosecuted as juveniles or as adults,
Well, I would imagine they were prosecuted as juveniles since their names haven't been released. Right? So,
yeah. And that may be why there's a closed. I was wondering why there was a closed hearing as well for the sentencing.
Yeah.
Probably because of juveniles. I think it's because of juveniles, and probably because their parents had money and they could afford competent attorneys. That probably had a lot to do with their sentences.
There was another case that just happened this past week, actually, and this really bothered me. It was a case of, I don't have it in front of me, a case of I think a 16-year-old, maybe even someone younger, who was accused of downloading child pornography from the net. Now, what a great way to ruin somebody's life, to publicly chastise them for what they choose to look at that's available on the Internet. I mean, this person was never accused of putting it there. All he did was, either in curiosity or whatever, he downloaded files, downloaded pictures. You download really weird-looking things sometimes when you're in school just to, shock people maybe, or just to see how shocking it gets. And here they are, they're putting him on TV and newspapers and bring his parents and friends and teachers into it. It's horrible. I mean, it's a lot more twisted than anything he could have been doing with the pictures to publicly humiliate somebody like that at that stage of life, And
something wrong there. Don't look at this.
I'm reading all these stories, and nobody's pointing to that aspect of it. They're like, he downloaded these pictures, therefore he's trafficking in them, therefore he's responsible for them. It's like opening a book that's deemed objectionable by a certain society and all of a sudden being blamed for all the thoughts and ideas that are in it, whether or not you even agree with the thoughts and ideas that are in it. Why would a 16-year-old be downloading pictures like that in the first place? 16-year-olds tend to be curious and, rebellious and things like, who knows what the reasons are? Is it really any of our business? I don't know. I have a lot of trouble with that. So, that was two cases. Now, we also have, this is kind of interesting, a new set of federal regulations requiring Internet service providers to register immediately with the U.S. government lest they be held legally liable for pirated material that flows through their servers. Bernie, do you know something about this?
I think I sent you a clip about that.
Well, that's why I'm asking. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Tell us what you know about this.
Honestly, I didn't do any research on it. It's just something I read on the internet, so it must be true. I think that it's either being voted on this week or it already has been voted on and passed. But it's a foregone conclusion; it'll pass because there's not a lot of lobbying against it, as there should be. But people who care about civil rights don't seem to have the money to lobby against such things. Anyway, apparently internet service providers are going to have to register with the federal government so that account information and so forth would be available to various federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. Should they decide to investigate a case, they can just tell the ISP to hand over the logs and or provide access to what's going on.
Not only that, but the ISPs have to pay a $20 filing fee to do this. And I think that's a shining insult to injury. You make a regulation and you force people to pay for the regulation. It's really amazing. I'd like to know from people out there if they're going to go along with this, because, you know, it's a rather insidious thing where they make you register, but then they use the registration for some other purpose. Who knows what they'll use it for down the road?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, everybody who is a writer has to register, otherwise you can't write. Everybody who performs this kind of service has to register, or you could face penalties in the future. It's just the wording kind of scares me.
Something else I was checking out today is that the FCC is considering classifying IP telephony services such as what company was that? We had a conversation over the station with
IDT.
IDT. Companies like that may well be liable to fall under the rules of CALEA, or the Digital Telephony Bill, that requires all telephony providers to provide backdoor law enforcement access to call information and to the calling traffic itself. So if you make your phone call over the internet, you also could be under surveillance without your knowledge.
That's something to be concerned.
And they're very stiff penalties for telephony providers who don't comply with that, something like $10,000 a day or something. So it's getting to be a strange world.
You have to wonder, what's the reason for all this? Why are they doing this?
Well, either they know something we don't know about things getting really bad, or they're just control freaks, and I think it's both, actually.
Well, speaking of things getting really bad, it's time now for the year 2000 section of the program, Countdown to Doom, which we focus on every now and then as time warrants. A secret cabinet disaster unit only activated in times of dire civil emergency, such as nuclear leaks, hostage situations, or foreign invasion, is to be mobilized on December 31st, 1999 to cope with the fallout from the Millennium Bug. This story comes from England. The Home Secretary, Jack Straw, also will be put on alert to coordinate a strategy to cope with chaos on Britain's roads, airports, and hospitals. The government fears that the ordinary emergency services will be unable to deal with the mayhem caused by the possible national shutdown of lifts, air traffic control systems, and hospital equipment. It plans to put the civil contingency unit, run by a secretive cabinet group known as COBRA, on alert to deal with the situation. This is not funny. I don't know why people are laughing. It's called COBRA. Okay, that's the name of it. The unit which has the power... Now you got me laughing. The unit, which has the power to assemble the heads of the Army, Navy, Royal Air Force, Security Services, and SAS for emergency strategy meetings, was last mobilized in 1994 during a training exercise to prepare for a possible nuclear attack by terrorists. So that story comes to us from the net. Bernie, what do you think of all this year 2000 brouhaha?
It's an awful lot of hysteria. And, I think a couple of months ago, our own Secretary of Defense, or the Undersecretary of Defense, mentioned the term martial law, and that was something that was under consideration as far as contingency planning for year 2000 turnover here in this country.
I just saw a documentary about that, where the martial law takes place in Brooklyn, and I believe the conclusion was it didn't work.
This was a documentary about it actually happening?
Yeah, it had that guy Denzel Washington in it, and...
That's a documentary?
Bruce Willis. I thought it was a documentary. It was presented so realistically that what else could it be? What?
Okay. Well,
documentary,
good.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't work.
No, I took notes, and I can see exactly why this kind of thing is very ill-advised.
Well, we don't have long to wait.
That's for sure. Just over a year now. Just over a year till the world ends or whatever happens. I don't know. It's going to be fun, though. If anybody has specific suggestions for what to do, let us know. All sports events will take place as scheduled, though. I was asked to pass that along. Okay, we have some more news from the hacker world. It seems that Agent Steele, known as Justin Peterson, well, Justin Peterson actually known as Agent Steele, is again on the run. That's right. We just found out about this a couple of days ago. But if you recall, a couple of months ago when we were in California, we discovered that Agent Steele had been imprisoned again for a probation violation. Well, it seems now it's gotten a little worse. A warrant was issued for his arrest on September 30th, and it has to do with him not meeting the terms of his probation, whether that means paying restitution, doing community service, showing up at the appointed places at the appointed times. My understanding is he got sick of it, and he's now overseas somewhere. So
this sounds,
that's going to be interesting. See how that pans
sounds,
out.
Sounds similar to Kevin Mitnick's situation when he went on the run. After
isn't it, though? I mean, it's so ironically similar. However, this guy, first of all, they were keeping this very quiet until somebody went and looked up the court records. This guy had been used as a key witness against Kevin, not to mention he was one of the key people that tried to entrap Kevin. And here you have somebody who basically does worse things, gets lighter sentences, and gets away scot-free. I'm not saying that this guy should be, you know, locked up, drawn and quartered, and all that kind of thing. You know, I kind of, anytime somebody escapes, I don't know, I think it's a victory for the individual. But in this case, it's a tough decision. It really is. I don't really know what to make out of this, but it's a very interesting story that he's on the run yet again. And people are pointing at Kevin as the criminal that deserves to be locked up forever.
Well, they'll probably just put Agent Steele's time on top of Kevin Mitnick's sentence.
Yeah.
He's not available.
It was all his fault. He gave him distress or something like that. One final news item from Holland. Access for All has been summoned to appear in court in Utrecht on November 20th, 1998, in connection with its refusal to assist with an internet tap. If you recall, November 1997, Access for All refused to comply with an order of the Ministry of Justice to tap the internet communications of one of its users in connection with a criminal investigation. Access for All takes the view that there are insufficient legal grounds for the order. Access for All therefore regards the order as an illegal method of investigation. On October 31, 1997, a detective and a computer expert from the Forensic Science Laboratory delivered the order to Access for All. The Ministry of Justice wanted Access for All to tap all internet communications to and from the user for a month and pass that information on to the police. This would cover email, World Wide Web, news groups, IRC, all other internet services used by this person. Access for All was to make all necessary technical provisions itself. Access for All does not wish to cooperate with invasions of privacy without an adequate legal basis. Furthermore, Access for All has a commercial interest in that it cannot risk its users taking civil actions against it for acting unlawfully. This could happen in the event of a provider making an intervention like this without a foundation in law. Cooperating with the order could set an undesirable precedent with far-reaching consequences for the privacy of all internet users in the Netherlands. The Ministry of Justice based its order on Article 125I of the Netherlands Code of Criminal Procedure. This article was introduced in 1993 as part of the Computer Crime Act. It gives examining magistrates the power during preliminary inquiries to order third parties to hand over data stored in computers in the interest of reaching the truth. The history of the legislation shows that it was never intended that this provision should be used for orders covering future periods. The legislature is still working on provisions to fill that gap in the arsenal of investigation methods by analogy with the tapping of telephone conversations. The Constitution and the European Convention for the Protection of Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms require a precise legal basis for any invasions of fundamental rights such as privacy and the privacy of correspondence. The First Chamber has very recently passed the new Telecommunications Act. This means tapping internet communications will become legally possible in the near future. At a conference organized by Access for All in February 1998, it was clear that lawyers and market participants are very critical of this new legislation. For example, the government has never said just why large-scale tapping, including internet communications, is supposed to be effective and cost-effective method of investigation. A recent report commissioned by the European Parliament shows that the European Union has collaborated with the American FBI to plan an extensive European tapping network without consulting national parliaments. The new Telecommunications Act creates the necessary conditions for such a network. So very ominous developments out of Holland there, but also very inspirational the way Access for All is standing up to this this travesty. The case against Access for All will be heard on Friday, November 20th, 11 a.m. in Utrecht, the Netherlands. We'll be following that case for you, and hopefully that will inspire other people to stand up to this kind of thing. Because I know that internet service providers are very often faced with difficult decisions. They're told to cooperate, turn over logs, you know, basically become a spying agency for the federal government, and it's something a lot of us don't want to do. And
well, oftentimes they're not given a choice. They're that or go to jail or pay fines that are just outrageous.
Well, you see, that is a choice. I know it's a difficult choice, but sometimes you have to stand up for what you believe in, and maybe there's a heavy penalty for doing that. But if you don't stand up for it, the penalty gets even heavier over the years, and it affects a lot more people.
Mm-hmm. But how about some good news?
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't have any more here.
I've got some here. Okay. In Finland.
Finland.
There's some good news from Finland. It was just announced a couple days ago. They have announced, the government of Finland has announced a new national cryptography policy. And the Finlandish?
I think they're just called Finns, actually.
Yes. The Finnish government, not that they're finished,
right.
has ordered, and in a unanimous court decision, that or unanimous lawmaking body, whatever they call their Congress, that there should be no restrictions on the use of strong encryption for confidentiality purposes. There should be no mandatory key recovery systems either, at least not provided for by law. Businesses and private persons should be encouraged to use voluntary key management systems. However, they are not obliged to do so by law, and there will be no special privileges or rights offered by public authorities for that purpose. They have to honor, according to previous agreements they've made with other governments, and that's left kind of vague. It says here, with regard to exports and export restrictions, Finland observes those arrangements to which it is internationally committed. However, with regard to reform of control lists and procedures, Finland's aims are to examine the restrictions on cryptographic products so that control lists correspond to technical development and to ensure that the necessary restrictions will not unreasonably impede normal trade or industry and businesses. So basically, unlike our government, which has been our FBI head, Louis Freeh, has been arguing and lobbying hard in Congress and before the Senate to require a mandatory key escrow. And I think all our listeners pretty much understand what that means, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it's one positive development. Maybe the FBI hasn't reached over to Finland yet, but don't be surprised to see this change in the months ahead. But we should keep track of all the positive and negative developments. Anyway, thanks for that update. We have Isaac here as well. Isaac, how you doing?
I'm just fine. How are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm fine. I'm pretty good, but I'm also a little confused because we had a little incident before the show concerning our Sprint phones, and I know Bernie has a lot to say about his Sprint phone. We'll allow him to do that in just a moment, and then we'll take some phone calls. But now you had. Well, I just want. We should just play this, right?
Yeah,
we should just play this.
It should
people.
Be self-explanatory.
I mean, this is. It's kind of scary, kind of frightening. Hang on a second. Let me see if I can get another dial tone here. I hope I don't lose Bernie. If I do, I'll call him right back. Okay. We have a dial tone there, and we're going to start dialing on it. We're going to dial your Sprint PCS number. Oh, I guess we're... Oh, okay. That was our special tone. Here we go. And now I know your password.
Yes, isn't that frightening?
Yeah.
I also keep single-character root passwords on all my machines.
Your phone should start ringing now, actually, in the studio.
It is, except I have the ringer
off. Oh, you have the ringer off. That's very considerate. A lot of people don't do that when they come to the studio.
Yeah, especially when it's like an active mic. And
mm-hmm. Why don't you... Well, you can't send it to voicemail. We have to sit through all these rings.
Yes, this is Sprint again.
Yeah. Now, OmniPoint, you could send to voicemail, which is kind of interesting. I got something to say about OmniPoint, too, but I'll get to that in a moment. Okay, how many rings does it take anyway? It should be the last one.
Typically 4 or 5. Yep, missed the call.
Okay, you missed the call.
Hi, I can't answer the phone right now.
All right.
Isaac.
Please enter.
Were you laughing
code.
When you said your name?
No, that was Bernie.
Oh, okay.
Bernie, you must
remain quiet because this is it's going to confuse us otherwise. Now, let's listen to this message. Was I supposed to hit a pound after?
No, new messages. One saved message. First saved message from
Please don't press that button.
Receive at
7. That's my name. That's me.
8 p.m.
Now, listen to this. This message was received by you, by me, from me, at 7:38 p.m.
Correct.
Which was about 20 minutes before the show.
Yes.
And it sounds... what do you make of these sounds?
To tell you the truth, I have no idea. Though towards the end, I can actually hear, like, an announcer or something sort of program, which is kind of strange.
Well, okay, here's the situation. At this particular point in time, I can verify that I was on a subway. I was on a subway train. I was not above ground because as soon as I got above ground, I called Bernie S. Bernie, did I not call you?
Yes.
Yes, okay. He's there to prove that. And on my phone, I have a log. It says what I called and what time I called. There is no call to your number. Listen to that.
It is very creepy.
This is Sprint's...
Erase. Press 7.
Quality audio.
Press 9.
Okay, hang on a second.
You didn't erase that, did you?
No, I didn't erase it. I would never erase that. Bernie, you still there?
I am. Now, about that same time, about half an hour before the show, I was calling you, Emmanuel, on your Sprint phone.
Uh-huh.
From my Sprint phone.
Uh-huh.
And we all have bad luck with Sprint phones, I guess. I was just hearing ring, and, you know, the ring back. In between the ring back, I was hearing a loud buzzing sound in between the rings. And it was very bizarre.
A buzzing sound?
A buzzing sound, like a loud hum, buzz. I've never heard it before. But in between the rings, it was like a loud hum, buzz. So it wasn't happening during the rings. And then I called a local number, and that wasn't happening at all, a local Sprint TCS number from a friend of mine, and I wasn't getting it. So it was something to do with the New York system. It was having all kinds of weird things going on with it.
That is most peculiar.
Well, now, I can add to that. There's something else that happened earlier today. There is a reason I wanted to forward one of my office lines to one of my portable phones. So I tried to forward it to my Sprint phone. It worked fine, except here's how it works. It's kind of complicated. I actually wanted to forward two lines in tandem, I guess. You know, call line A forwards to line B forwards to line C. Reason being, line B calling line C has a better call rate than line A, but the person I'm expecting a call from is only going to call line A. So I can't have line A go to C because then I'll pay for it. I can't have him call B because I can't tell him to call B since I'm here using phone number C right now. So he's going to call A, it's going to forward to B, and it's going to forward to C, and then it'll get me on my phone. Right?
Is that
simple,
makes
right?
Perfect sense.
Perfect sense. So here's the thing. I tested it. First I did B to C, and I tested it, and it worked just fine. Then I forwarded A to B, and I tested it. A did forward to B. But here's the weird thing. When A forwarded to B and then forwarded to C, it terminated in a Sprint error recording saying that, we're sorry, your call cannot be completed as dialed. Goodbye. And apparently, Sprint has some sort of limitation. You guys might want to try this. If you forward twice, it can't complete the call. Cannot complete the call at all. Isn't that weird?
Why would they do that?
I don't know. I don't think they did it intentionally. But I can actually, if there's a way to do this, you familiar with OmniPoint phone? Okay, it's in French stuff. For some reason, my OmniPoint phone started speaking French. I don't know why I dropped it and just reverted to the wrong language. It's kind of cool, but it's also kind of annoying. I want to forward this phone. You can do that? Okay, forward this phone. First, I'm going to demonstrate. Actually, let me have that phone back for a second. I'm going to demonstrate. Bernie, I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to call another number over here. Thousand? Okay. And we're going to demonstrate how this phone number will go through two different phone lines and wind up at my OmniPoint phone. Listen to the pause. I don't know what that means. Oh, you know what? It needs a code. Oh, boy. Okay. There's a code. That's a code. That's a working code. Okay, hang on. Let's try that again. Maybe I waited too long. It's BAI phone system. There we go. Okay, here's the code. All right, now the call is processing. It's taken quite a while to get to us. But it got to us. It forwarded through two different lines. We have no caller ID, by the way, but BAI never does. Okay, now, what I'd like you to do is forward that phone to this phone. Okay. So we're going to forward that phone to this phone. Let's get Bernie back. Bernie, you there? Okay.
I'm here.
We're going to forward the OmniPoint phone to the Sprint phone and see if we can call... Actually, now we're involving four phone lines, A to B to C to D. And let's see how confusing that gets for Sprint. Maybe it was a fluke, but I tried it, you know, amongst different conditions. I tried calling the number direct, and it just would not happen that way. I don't know why this is. It's interesting. We noticed this about a year or so ago, that on your Sprint PCS or actually on the OmniPoint phone, it tells you if the call is being forwarded, which I thought was kind of interesting right there. So it's just, I guess, more examples of how things get very confusing. Now, Bernie, you had a particular problem with your Sprint phone.
Well, I've had a lot of problems with my
Sprint. All right, well, let's wrap this one up in like a minute or less so we can take some phone calls.
I'm trying to think which one you're talking about. I've had so many.
Well, it's the one you said you wanted to talk about tonight when I talked to you before. You said...
just the general case you've probably been running into where your phone just doesn't ring and it just goes to voicemail, and then maybe hours later you'll get a voicemail message.
Well, that was a problem. When I was in Philadelphia, I remember we were trying to hook up, and I was trying to call you, and you were trying to call me, and neither one of us was getting through, and it was really annoying.
You were, in fact, trying to find my house.
Yeah.
And every time you called, you got my voicemail, and you ended up spending like an hour driving around Philadelphia looking for me because you said you'd call me right back. Answer the phone in 2 minutes, Bernie, you said, and I was waiting for the phone to ring. And so while I was waiting, I took a shower and... Uh-huh. Had the phone in me, next to the shower with me, didn't hear it ring, etc.
And you didn't get a notification of voicemail either?
Nope.
Oh, well.
Yeah, a couple hours later, I got the voicemail messages.
Is that still happening down there? Because it seemed to be a Philadelphia phenomenon when I was
yes,
there.
Yes, it's happening some days more often than others.
Have you talked to them about this? Have you asked them?
The people at the local Sprint PCS office seem to be pretty clueless. They don't know why it's happening. They just say, they're working on it, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that seems to run rampant between Sprint stores everywhere.
Okay, now here's something involving... Is it done? Okay, it's processing. It's done. Okay, so let me have that phone. What we're going to do now is put Bernie it back on hold. And
you put it back in English for him?
Oh, put it back. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to now call back that other number and see if it forwards to the Sprint phone or if it gives us some bizarre recording. Enter our secret code, and here we go. Which phone will ring, if any? Hey, it went through that time. That's awfully weird. That's very strange. Well, okay. I have no
explanation
for
this. Whoa.
What do you think of that?
Whoa!
That's
pretty scary.
The only question is whose voice is that I'm hearing saying who's
speaking
on the
line?
Bernie,
is that you?
That's not me.
What do you mean that's not you? I didn't pick you up. Somehow you came up on this line. I don't understand how this is happening.
All right,
well,
let me hang up on this.
Oh, but that was so amusing.
It was pretty funny. All right, here we go.
Gone. Bernie, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I don't know. Let me put you on hold so we don't lose you. And let's go over here. Bernie, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, I don't understand it. Just further proof that nobody really knows what's going on. But I'll tell you, you do it with three lines, it doesn't go through. You do it with four lines, it does. Who knows what's going on here? All right, OmniPoint. Remember how OmniPoint's big saying was, yes, more of that. Huh? That's new, right? OmniPoint was saying how... they were better than everybody else. And why? Because they didn't have all these confusing contracts. No contracts. No hassle. Remember
no
that?
Contracts,
well, guess what? They've changed their whole marketing strategy here. OmniPoint introduces free speech. If you cancel your contract before 12 months, there is a $150 termination fee. You know, it's amazing how these people just, like, totally change the way that they do business. And they don't even bother to say, oh, by the way, this is 180 degrees different than what we've been telling you all the time that we've been around. But... it's just how the marketplace works, I guess. Pretty weird. Okay, let's take some phone calls because we're running out of time. 212-209-2900. We have Bernie S. with us on the phone from Philadelphia. Hopefully your phone will hold out. You still there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. And let's take our first phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Emmanuel. You're talking about annoying things.
I wasn't thinking when I hit that button.
I have some annoying voicemail for
talk about annoying
like
things, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, annoying voicemail.
Annoying. Let's all say annoying as many times as possible, and then we'll get
right.
The idea.
Well, do you ever call a voicemail system and, like, want to speak to a representative or a live person and, like, press zero? But sometimes Yeah, you know, it makes common sense. When you press zero, you're supposed to get a live person, right?
Well, yeah, it makes sense, but then again, that...
Yeah,
you know,
but
why,
then again, some kids, you know what happens sometimes?
What happens sometimes?
You press zero, it says, I'm sorry, the digit you pressed is invalid. Then you press zero again, and it still says, I'm sorry, the digits you pressed are invalid.
Hang on.
Then you... I'm sorry. The digits you pressed are still invalid. We are
that is annoying.
Hold on.
We are transferring you to a representative.
Maybe I hit a pound sign.
Yeah. After the three zeros, then they realize
it doesn't work.
Oh
man.
That one
okay,
worked.
That one worked.
That one worked just
that,
well.
I like that button.
Yeah.
That's the big red button. Bernie, you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Let's go to our next call, which is down where I should have gone in the first place, over here. Good evening. You're on the air. Yeah, this is better. Even though there's nobody here, this is better.
Hello?
Yeah, okay, there's somebody there. Speak up louder, please.
Why do you talk about crap the whole time?
Oh, because we only have an hour, and we'd have to go into more detail if we had more time. I don't know. Let's go over here. Good evening, you're on the air. All right, that seems
hello?
To be like... yeah.
We already
up,
did
please.
The cavern thing.
Take the phone away from the speaker of the radio, and... we can hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I work for Sprint PCS, and
uh-oh.
I'm listening to everything you're saying, and unfortunately,
uh-oh.
Everything you're saying is true.
Oh, no.
The service is bad. I have an employee phone. My service is bad. Customer service is bad.
Okay, not to dispel what you're saying, but how do we know you're not just a disgruntled customer? You really do work for Sprint PCS?
I really do work for Sprint PCS.
Is there some way you could sort of tell us something that only a Sprint PCS employee would know? Not a secret. Don't tell us any secrets. Just...
Well, in terms of what?
I don't know. Something about the network that only a technical person would know. Or are you a salesperson or a technical person?
Customer service.
Customer service.
Mm-hmm.
How do you answer the phone?
Thank you for calling Sprint PCS. Your name. How may I help you?
That's a
bingo.
I think I talked to you. I think I talked... Hold on. Don't go away.
Okay.
That's
oh, no. She went away. I put her on hold and she disappeared. How is that possible? Hold on. Everybody hold on. This is Bernie S.'s line. It's flipping out on us. Okay, let's go over here. Is this the Sprint person?
Yes.
Oh, thank God. Okay. The phone started ringing again. I don't know. Our lights are all messed up. Okay. Well, we're glad we still have you. So, that sounds very, very
yes,
realistic, what you said.
I have a feeling I spoke to her before.
What are the most common complaints you get?
People have a problem with the coverage. They constantly complain that calls are dropping, calls go directly to voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
And all we can say, well, what they tell us to say is that they're trying to improve the network. And, I mean, I feel bad for customers, but that's all we can tell them.
Uh-huh. And what is the real reason for this?
To be honest, we really don't know. I mean, we have a technical staff that is really out there trying to improve the network because we took on so many customers at one time, and we're trying to accommodate all the customers that we have on our network, and now we're giving upgrades to all customers who've had phones in the past so that their phones can lock onto the new cell sites.
Uh-huh.
But especially in the New York area, there's a great deal of problem in terms of coverage. A lot of calls are not – we have, like, our new phones that just came out, Samsung 2000s, they're not hooked up to the new networks and the cell sites in New York. So the calls are going straight to voicemail instead of ringing. And the phone that you have, I could tell that's a Samsung either 1900 or 2000.
Yes,
that's very good.
Really?
That's very
Bravo.
Good. That's I'm very impressed by that.
Yeah.
Well, would you say that Sprint has oversold the network, that there's too many people on that, you know, for their capacity?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, they're expanding the network every day. They're really trying to accommodate all the customers that they have.
Uh-huh.
They really are.
Uh-huh.
That's why they have so many promotions to try to keep the customers happy until they can get everything right.
Interesting. Can you hold on one moment?
Sure.
Okay, because we're going to try to get Bernie S. back here. And I know he's very frustrated because he was on a Sprint PCS phone at the time when he got disconnected. So let's call him back and see if we can establish communications and hook him into this conversation. We'll need our special secret code. Okay. Hopefully this won't go to voicemail.
Hello?
Bernie, you there?
Yes, I got Sprint PCS cut me off.
Yes,
right about the time.
I realize that. We're gonna try to tie you in again. So hang on. Is our Sprint person still there?
Hang up.
Sprint person, are you there? Who was that? They hung up. Did you hear that?
Yes.
They said, oh, boy, that's terrible. Bernie, you have the worst luck in the world.
She was probably calling her on her Sprint phone.
That's terrible. Oh, well, so we lost that person.
So were you able to verify she indeed did work for Sprint?
She worked for Sprint. I can pretty much confirm that from the way she answered the phone. Or
and what? Unfortunately, I missed that. What did she say about all these problems?
Basically that, they're trying hard, right?
Well, they're instructed to tell you that,
mm-hmm.
And they're just offering people different service upgrades in order to kind of keep them quiet until such time as all of a sudden the service upgrades mean something.
I've been told many things, including that some of the system problems, this is a few months ago, some of the system problems were being caused by Sprint satellites being blown off course by El Nino.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is true. This came from a Sprint PCS representative at their toll-free number. And when I brought this up to a supervisor, he apologized and offered to give me 30 minutes of free calls, which at my rate, I pay like 5 cents a minute. I said, well, that's about worth a cup of coffee and not worth my time. And I just hung up.
We could give you the coffee, too.
Wow. Well, if that person's out there, please call us back so we can ask some more questions. But for now, let's take another phone call over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have a quick story.
Make it quick.
Okay. In English class, I read a book by Bernard Malamud, The Fixer.
Uh-huh.
And it was about a Russian Jew who moved into a non-Jewish district to get ahead in life, and he was arrested for murder, and which he didn't commit, and was put in jail for 2 years in solitary confinement, and the Russian police held him there for 2 years because they didn't have any evidence to convict him,
uh-huh.
So they held him there without trial, hoping that he would finally, forfeit his rights and admit to killing the child.
Uh-huh.
And I think this shows how far we've come from the Bernie S. From Kevin Mitnick.
They
only had me locked up for about a year and a half.
But yeah, you can definitely see the parallels there, and just the sense that if you torture somebody enough, eventually they'll give in. What happens at the end?
Well, he goes to the trial because the Jewish community supported him. But at the end, it's really weird because he's so tired. A bomb goes off, and it seems like he's blown up, but sort of like a cliffhanger. Insinuated that he survives.
What's the name of this again? The Fixer?
The Fixer by Bernard Malamud.
That's something I have to pick
up. And when was this written?
I believe during the 50s.
Really? Okay, I'll have to check that out. That's
it's a very good book.
A lot of parallels there. Thanks so much for calling.
Okay.
Take care. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, what I was saying...
Goodbye. So what you have to understand, folks, there's a city of millions of people, and the Internet is out there. Can't always have the same people talking over. I know I'm the same person, but I'm the one in front of the microphone, so that's like, you got to have me, unfortunately. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, I want to talk about OmniPoint. I just heard their stock had blown up today because they are supposedly paying off some people in the FCC or something like that. just a point about information.
They're paying off people in the FCC, and that's how the news was reported, huh?
I did not actually get the exact piece of news.
You don't work for Sprint PCS too, do you?
No, I just work for a stock market kind of company.
Okay. Well, so their stock went way up, you're saying?
No, it's going to go way down tomorrow morning.
Go way down tomorrow morning. So,
first,
if I have OmniPoint stock, I want to dump it first thing in the morning, is what you're trying to tell me.
Well, no, it already opened up, by that point you won't be able to dump it anyhow.
So what can I do?
I don't know about that. I'm just glad I don't own it.
Yeah, well,
I just want to also mention something else on internet.
Uh-huh.
Surfing, internet filters. I just think more people should get these things and download them and use them because they could really block out all the advertisements, and it's a pretty good way of just kind of spoiling the whole.
People have been trying to do this for centuries, and we need a...
I know. I just started researching, and it seems like they're pretty good, and it seems like they work pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody's used them, but just a suggestion.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Thing with internet filters, you don't know what you're filtering that you might want to read. That's the only problem with that, is that you might miss something and not know it. All right, and by the don't sell your OmniPoints. We're not telling you to sell your OmniPoints stock because we all know what's going on. I mean, who knows what the agenda of the person calling was, but we'll keep an eye on the situation, as always. All right, let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, let's go over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh.
Yes? Is there somebody there? Okay, I don't know what's going on down there. Maybe they can't hear me on that one. Let's try over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I have a question about Y2K, if I may.
Well, sure. We can't stop it.
Okay. I hear mostly on BAI not to respond with alarm or in an hysterical manner, which is fine because that's not my style.
You're
anyway.
Already on edge enough as it is, so yeah, try not to...
There you go. That's right. I heard a guy on the other night who I think was involved with the Y2K news... publication on the net. Anyway, he was speaking rather thoughtfully in a clear way about the trend with computerized chips in industry has been to lay off the people who can then override them manually should that need arise. Have you heard those ideas? Or he was saying basically if enough little hardware chips mess up simultaneously and each one needs to be manually dealt with by someone going into the field, that there'd be a problem that couldn't really be addressed by the because of a lack of manpower. Does that make any sense, or have you heard that?
I haven't heard that specifically.
It sounds feasible. I mean, it's not just manpower, it's trained manpower. I mean, the fact that a computer can control some of these systems means that a manual operator would have to be somewhat skilled. And
right.
If you haven't trained anyone in the past 5 years, guess what? You're not going to have anybody there.
Yeah, that's right. Interesting. He was also saying that there's a roughly 5% awareness rate in this country about that year and what it might require behaviorally. And he was concerned about, even if Y2K is not a problem itself technically, that the public awareness of it as it goes from 5% to, let's say, 95% in 1 year could cause, you know, food shortages and huge buying sprees and stuff like that.
I agree with that. I mean, I think that the reaction to the potential problem is what we're really going to see a problem from, not the problem itself.
Right. Okay. So you're somewhat concerned. How would you rate your concern about it? Or, I mean, how would you?
Personally, I think the whole thing is really overblown, but I'm only saying that because nobody else is.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a matchbook cover right now. It says, be an embedded controller. Earn big money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Scrambling for recruitment.
That's it, all right.
We can charge them what we want, huh?
Yeah, that's the way of the future. All right, thanks so much for
sure
calling.
Sure thing. Thanks.
And, thanks again. Bernie, what do you think is going to happen in 2000?
I'm training to be an embedded controller myself.
Yeah. But January 1st, 2000, what's going to happen? Let's have some predictions here.
Panic, chaos.
Yeah.
And general indifference by some people, like myself.
Uh-huh. But all these people are going to be hung over from the night before. Can you really panic in a drunken state? You know? I guess we'll find out. Isaac, any predictions?
Predictions for 2000?
Yeah.
It'll take me more than a minute to go on about that, so I suppose I'll just pass.
I predict a lot of people will be trying to make money off this. The media will be trying to make all kinds of stories, and the American people, as usual, will just be led around like the sheep they are. I didn't mean that as in a bad way, though. I don't mean to insult people, but I'm just saying, you know, we tend to get... we're out of time. We'll have to continue this next time for another edition of Off the Hook. Bernie, thanks so much for being part of the show.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Good luck with reception down there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I need it.
Stay away from that federal prison.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I'm right in front of Independence Hall right now.
Oh, you are? You're outside.
Yeah, I'm looking at that big surveillance camera they mounted in the bell tower.
That's something, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, we are out of time. Thanks so much for joining us again. Isaac, thanks for coming in.
Oh, no problem.
We'll see you again next week for another edition of Off the Hook. Until then, Emmanuel Goldstein, good night.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself off shaving, now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much work, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bones was the best effect to work. I hope that's understood, but Billy, no!
And I'm Ruby Dee.
Coming to you from WBAI Pacifica Radio's new studios at 120 Wall Street.
For nearly 40 years, WBAI has challenged convention with news, public affairs, arts, and cultural programs unmatched by any other radio station in the country.
To complete the construction of our new facilities, we're asking for our capital campaign for the future now.
Keep supporting the station that brings you the people's voice, the station that wins more yearly industry awards than any other station in the country. At this time of corporate dominance of the public airwaves, WBAI is needed more than ever.
Please pledge or send your gift today to ensure the success of our $1 million capital campaign for the future. Call 212-209-2909. That number again, 212-209-2909. This is Archie Davis.
And Ruby Dee.
Thank you for supporting the future of WBAI.